is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, March 8th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. Sean Bartley is working in California, a Buster only in Fort Myers. Just after, we were taping this just after our exhibition broadcast on Thursday of the Braves and the Boston Red Sox. Sean, I got to say, today's one of those days where you should be jealous of me, okay? At a ballpark, beautiful day, sunny, everyone's optimistic, everybody's happy, even the Red Sox.
That's what's up, man. Unfortunately, I missed the game, so I wasn't able to figure out who won. But yeah, to be honest, I am pretty jealous. It's been kind of gloomy, rainy weather here. I don't know what's going on with the LA weather, but yeah, definitely wish I was with you soaking up some good sun.
Yeah, well, you know what? There are plenty of tickets available, that's for sure. I mentioned how everything is positive, even for the Red Sox today. That's in part because they agreed to terms with Brian Bayo on a six-year, $55 million contract extension. You know, we've heard about how the Red Sox really need to develop a foundation of pitching, and Bayo is one of those guys who's going to be a part of it. Last year, he went 12-11, 4.24 ERA. And now that he's locked up, and I would expect that this deal could be announced over the weekend when the Red Sox are in Dominican Republic, then they at least have a piece that they can rely on going forward. On the other hand, for the Yankees, the other day, Carlos Rodon gave up 3 runs and 5 hits in 3-plus innings against the Tampa Bay Rays on Wednesday. His velocity was a little down. His quote to reporters was, "Didn't really have the fastball velo I wanted to. But it's one of those days. It's one of those days you've got to be able to pitch without a fastball and kind of use some other things." I mentioned our game, Braves and Red Sox today. Jordan Luplo faced Nick Pivetta. Here's what that sounded like. And what was kind of cool about that was that Luplo hit a long, long foul ball. And according to Tristan Casas, who was wearing a microphone for us, Luplo got to near first base and was like, "I can't believe it." Like he hit a long fly ball that was just foul. And on the very next pitch, he crushed a two-run homer to left field. So a good day for him. In the middle of our broadcast, Joey Votto joined us via Zoom. And he talked again, as he did on the podcast last week, about the fact that he is dying to play. His quote to Carl Ravitch when Carl asked him about his plans, he said, "I'll do whatever it takes to get back on a major league field. I just miss it. It's the best game."
On a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do you want to play? What would you be willing to do to return?
I mean, I'll do whatever it takes to get back on a major league field.
I must say, if you're a team like the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't know how you watch that, Sean, without thinking to yourself, "Man, we got to give this guy a shot.
See what happens."
We'll see what happens. That's exactly right. All right, what else you got?
Man, just wanted to tell everybody, go check out the College Game Day podcast. Once again, had Jonathan Smith on. And then also go check out the episode we just did with Albert Pujols on the Baseball Tonight podcast.
He was fantastic. Albert was great talking about, you know, the fact that he would love to manage. And he ran through in a lot of detail about how he'd handle pitching, how he'd handle clubhouse, how he would talk to players after having a great career himself and trying to relate to players and maybe struggling a little bit.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck.
The legend.
On its way. Out of here.
Giambi on Baseball Tonight.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Giambi, of course, the voice of the Chicago Cubs on television, and also he's the voice of ESPN Radio play-by-play. Boog, it's always great to talk with you. How are you doing?
Buster, what's happening? It's good to see you, brother.
It's good to see you, too. So I always enjoy conversations with you around sort of advanced thinking in baseball, because I'm catching up and trying to catch up. And I was curious about this topic because it's something that's come up in conversations with front offices during the course of the wintertime. And today, when we were around the Atlanta Braves, And that is the topic of load management in baseball. And as you know, in recent years, more and more teams have gone to scheduled days off. You know, they monitor how players' bodies are feeling, and they schedule off days to the degree that there have been situations, and I can't remember the specific dates, but there have been situations when the Yankees may have lost two or three games in a row. They're playing the second game in Fenway Park, and Aaron Judge is not in the lineup, right? Yeah. They went that far. Well, I've talked to a lot of front offices this winter where I'm hearing some musings about, well, the Atlanta Braves, who right now are arguably one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball, all of their guys play 162. And I had a conversation about that with Francisco Lindor the other day, and he mentioned, because he's another guy who likes to play every single day, and you know, he and Brandon Nimmo told me, look, there are other ways where you can cut down in your physical activity, try to protect yourself a little bit more other than skipping games. Nimmo said to me, you go into each day saying that the priority today is to play in a game. And if you can do more on top of that, that's great. Austin Riley had a conversation with him, talked to Brian Snitker. They really believe that that 162 mentality is something passed down from Andrew Jones and Chipper Jones. Austin Riley talked about how when he came out of a game in the middle of the game, sixth or seventh inning early in his career, Freddie Freeman was giving him a hard time. Like, what are we doing here? Come on. The culture there is for players to post up. And Snitker said on our air today, he really thinks it serves the players well. He actually thinks it helps protect them physically, because they maintain all of the, you know, the mechanisms in their swings and movements that allow them to be successful. Tell me where you fall.
I have so many thoughts. My first thought is 162 games is too many games. We play too many games. I would say that my next thought is, I, having been around it and now being with the Cubs and seeing Dansby Swanson, I really will not dispute the mental part of it, where you just get locked in of, we're doing the thing. You know, last year, September 1st, and the Cubs ended up fading. And by the way, people would make, some would make the case that Dansby Swanson may have faded down the stretch because he was tired. But, you know, September 1st, he stands in David Ross's doorway and says, hey, no more days off the rest of the year, because they're trying to make the playoffs. I think mentally I get it. I would just say a couple of things. Number one, it feels a little bit like the arguments over time when people, in my opinion, still would get it backwards, and even the guys themselves, so that they would say, well, Tom Seaver would throw 150 pitches in a game. Nolan Ryan would pitch all the time. Bob Gibson would pitch all the time. And I think where people got it backwards was, those guys weren't special because they threw all the time. They threw all the time because they were special.
Right.
So, like, I don't think the idea that playing someone 162 games is best for them physically, I would dispute. I just think, you know, like my buddy Tom Haberstroh did an article about the NBA some years back when the schedule was different. It just talked about the second night on back-to-back, the team on the road, the second night of the back-to-back in the second half, they never dunked. Like, it's just, like, fact. So I think there's some in between. I do think that, hey, have the mentality of being out there every day. I don't know how you find that middle ground, because I don't think there's any question that one of the things that makes Dansby special and Freddie special is the fact that they want to be out there every single day. But I would also maintain to you that if you gave me 162 healthy games of Mike Trout, that the best performance I would get out of him would have him playing 155 games. That's my opinion. So I think they have really good players. So I do understand, like, the overwhelming mindset, and there's always this want to, like, tug back on the other end of the rope. But no, just from a logic standpoint, no one's disputing that if these guys are playing harder than ever, and when we look at pitching, all anybody's trying to do is get more rest for guys. That's all they're trying to do is get more rest so that guys can get healthier. Now, is it working? There's obviously another question, but they're not inputting the same effort as they did 40 years ago. The effort during the time where they're pitching is way higher. It is stepping on the gas. It is max effort. I just have such a hard time thinking that when in every instance people would tell you to get the best performance out of a pitcher, we're going to try and get him an extra day's rest wherever we can, that wouldn't hold true for position players.
You know, you and I, surprisingly, I think fall in the same, you know, the same place on this whole issue. I agree with you. I do think it's probably a good mentality for a clubhouse, a team to build.
Yes.
To expect to show up on a given day and to play. And on the other hand, I do think, and I covered Cal Ripken, right? Who played in 2,632 straight games. And you know this, no one will ever come close, not within 1,500 games of that record, because privately, what a lot of folks were saying, including in the Orioles organization, was, you know what, that was a bad idea. Now, Mike Flanagan, who played with him, thought, you know, that was a kryptonite for Cal, for the mentality was really important for him. But in terms of his performance, he'd go through long slumps, and the option of sitting him down wasn't there. And that'll never happen again. But I would say this, there have been situations in recent years where I don't mean to pick on Aaron Judge, there have been situations where the Yankees lose a couple games, or, you know, maybe they go into Fenway Park and he has a scheduled day off on a Sunday. And I think that's crazy too. Like the idea that on the Monday before that Sunday, you say we're giving Aaron Judge the day off as opposed to having input, going back and forth. I think that's as wacky as saying you're going to play in every game.
Yeah,
I think you have to make those assessments as you go. And I agree with you. I think generally speaking, the idea is, look, occasionally getting a rest is a good thing for you.
I also would say this, like, I love Snit, but it gets the manager off the hook, because ultimately it's just like, then, because one of the problems in this whole thing, whether it's pitchers or position players, is players lie. They lie all the time about, like, hey, can you go a little farther? Yeah, I can do it. Absolutely. Hey, are you okay to play today with that knee? Yeah, absolutely I can. So now the whole thing, if it's 162, it's very freeing for the manager, and I get it. And again, I like the mentality, and he's one of the best managers in the game. I just think it gets overstated. I think everybody needs a day off here or there.
I would say this too. It's interesting that this team with this 162 mentality, they get a few days off after the season because they got the first round bye, and what happens? Boom, they get knocked out.
Yes.
Which would back up what Snit was saying, like the players getting in the rhythm of things, and, you know,
but a few, like, days that's off. One of those, like, you know, like I did that series, and, like, you know, sort of play that one all the way out. Do you honestly think that there's a single team that if you gave them the choice to buy or to play, that they'd play?
Snit said today when we talked to him, he said, I hope we finish in first place with the best record and we get the buy. And then he was like, and we're going to figure that out.
Okay.
Right? Which is the mentality you got to have.
Yep.
All right. I got a few other things for you. Joey Votto came on the broadcast today. Just as he did on the podcast last week, he is dying to play. I think he makes a lot of sense for the Blue Jays, a very right-handed hitting team. He lives 25 minutes from the ballpark. I don't think money is a big deal. That's just a guess on my part. I think he's made it pretty clear he's willing to do whatever it takes to get back to the big leagues. And he was very funny today in talking with us. He was talking about, you know, when Carl Ravitch noticed that he had a book on Gandhi behind him, he talked about, hey, these are all props meant to make you think that I'm smarter than I actually am. You know, it was a classic Joey Votto conversation. Give me some Joey Votto memory.
I had a 4th of July game probably like 5 years ago with Rick Sutcliffe, and it was the Reds and the White Sox, and they were both bad. And ESPN at the time is doing, you know, Mondays, Wednesdays, Sunday nights, but you contractually you had to have all 30 teams on. So it was literally, I mean, they were both bad. And So it was literally like you wanted to come on the air in the open and say, "Hi, everybody. John Ciambi and Rick Sutcliffe. You may be wondering why we're doing the Reds and the White Sox here on the 4th of July, but we are contractually obligated to show all 30 teams, and so we give you this game." and so anyway, I ended up interviewing Joey Votto for 10 minutes, and we cut it into three pieces and two boxed it, and it was – he was amazing. He was, you know, there were so many different topics we talked about, but one that was really fun was I asked him, what does the strike zone look like to Joey Votto? I said, is it like a beautiful mind and there are equations flashing around it or whatever? And he laughed and he said, I promise you it's nothing that dramatic. But then he said, and he like took a deep breath and he closed his eyes and he said, I just could tell you that when it's a ball, and he took another breath and he goes, it just feels really far away. And it was like, it was as authentic as it gets, but it was like he was taking you in there and telling you this is what it's like. The strike zone, even when I'm on it, it's not a strike. It feels like it's a million miles. So he's just so interesting and thoughtful. And I love him in the game because I just think he's magnificent.
And I wish that executives, you know, with other teams who haven't had him would understand this about Joey. And I think you'll agree with me 100%. Let's say that he signs with a team and he goes and plays in the minor leagues. If it's not happening for him, I think he's the first guy who tells you. Like, he is full awareness of that. He's not going to be hitting 140 and fooling himself as to whether or not. And what's different this year is, you know, he basically blew out his shoulder. He had major shoulder surgery, and he's come back from that, and he's feeling healthy. And I think that, look, if a really smart Joey Votto is willing to go down to the minor leagues and ride the buses and bounce around, it's not costing me a lot of money, why not?
He's been one of my favorite players. I mean, there's so many different stories. There was the great story, I think Ken Rosenthal wrote it, about when Matt Carpenter was really trying to redo his swing. And I can remember asking Matt Carpenter 2 years before that, who are the guys you like watching? And he was said to me, Joey Votto. But he told a story about calling Joey Votto, who happened to be in Paris. And Carp was like, call me another time. And Joey Votto's like, absolutely not. We got to figure this thing out. And they talked for 2 hours on the phone, like while Carpenter is at home, like basically bottoming out. And Joey Votto is sitting there saying, no, come on, let's figure out what to do with your swing. So I'm such a fan. I mean, he like, you just can't look, bud, this is your department as, you know, a baseball reporter. And one of the things that makes you great at what you do, and that is you trust your judgment, and you, in my opinion, have a great idea of what's interesting. Joey Votto's interesting. Always. Always.
Along the same lines, you're talking about Matt Carpenter, and that's a great story. I once did a feature on Joey, and I asked Jay Bruce, I said, do you talk hitting? You know, another left-handed hitter talking with Votto. He goes, I can't do that. Like, I mean... Because Joey is doing the beautiful mind thing that you just referenced, and Jay Bruce is not there. And it was like speaking a different language, so he couldn't talk with him. Before we go, I got a few quick ones for you. Brian Baio, 6 years, $55 million with the Boston Red Sox. You know Craig Breslow. He used to work with the Cubs, now running the Red Sox baseball ops. It feels like the first big step forward for the Red Sox under Breslow.
Craig Breslow's sharp. You know, one of the things with the Cubs – for the longest time, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer kind of punted on pitching until they hired Craig Breslow and decided to develop pitching. And now, whether it's acquisition and development or draft and development, you know, they've delivered on pitching, and Craig Breslow has everything to do with it. So I still would like to see. I'm not quite sure what the Red Sox are doing, but I'd still. I'm a little confused by that in sort of a broad picture.
Do you agree with me that this offseason coming up is going to be a crazy managerial carousel because there's so many managers who in the last years of contracts, Aaron Boone, Alex Cora, Dave Roberts, Skip Schumacher, and they're also Ollie Marmol, and they're also a ton of teams that are essentially playing under must-win mandates this year.
No question. What do you think? Yeah, for sure. They're absolutely. And I would almost be surprised if some of those names that you mentioned don't move places.
Yeah, exactly. And last one, I'll give you 30 seconds. Phillies, Yankees is my pick in the World Series. Again, the Phillies beating the Yankees. Please criticize.
I don't think I have a strong criticism there. It's funny, as I grew up, that was the World Series that I always wanted to see. Eventually, we saw it in 2009. But my mom's side of the family was always Yankees fans. My dad's side was Phillies fans. They got their hooks in me. And remember, it was like every year, only the Phillies would lose to the Dodgers and the Yankees would beat the Royals. And then the one year the Phillies finally broke through in 1980, the Royals beat the Yankees. And it didn't happen for me. I think both those teams are more than good enough to do it. I think I would probably, in the National League, I think between the Phillies, the Braves, and the Dodgers, I think those three teams are all really good. And I like the Yankees.
All right. Okay, Book, thanks for doing this. We'll talk about the Cubs another time.
You got it.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing on this for Thursday?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. Still have a lot of adrenaline from that game broadcast. And, you know, I tweeted out yesterday morning that I picked the Phillies to win the World Series over the Yankees. And I confess, I'm fully guilty of getting a little swept up in spring training optimism. Like being around those players and hearing their stories about one of your favorite players, Juan Soto, all the veterans going and watching and take batting practice. Talking with different players about, you know, how good DJ LeMahieu it looks is part of the reason why I made that selection. I think there is a chance that they're going to bounce back. You spent a lot of time in Arizona this spring, and you have special insight into our two game broadcasts this week because you're listening in to the game the other day, Mets and Yankees, and today for Braves and Red Sox. Give me an example of maybe where you have been swept up with the spring training optimism that we feel every year.
I mean, I might have to go into Mariners here. I think that, you know, their offseason from an outside perspective, there was definitely some negativity. I know fans weren't happy with the team not spending. Some people want them to spend money, go after Blake Snell. And I feel like people are almost expecting them to take a step back, even though they didn't get any tangibly worse in the offseason. Being there and talking to Julio, of course, and just being around the players, watching them take BP, do a workout, and everything, I realized that my perception of that was very much marred by social media. And that this team is not feeling that way at all. And all of a sudden, I'm reminding myself, yeah, this team is going to be very competitive in that AL West. So I might go with them. But I will say, I don't like the term swept up in the optimism because I think it does count. I think the intangibles are very important. I think that, having that optimism is very important. And I think saying swept up is almost implying that you and I are kind of being blinded by it, and I would put more stock in it than that. So give yourself more credit for what you're seeing with the team, is what I would say.
Well, and Sarah, I think you'll remember this. Our first game broadcast last year was the Texas Rangers, and I walked away from that, and I talked to you about
Yes.
this at the time, that there was something about that Ranger team. And believe me, I didn't come close to predicting them to win the World Series, but there was a toughness about that team. There was an absolute seriousness about that team that you could feel right away, led by Marcus Semien, led by Corey Seager. Like, these guys love to play. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember you texting me maybe right after that game, maybe you did the podcast after, whatever it was. And I distinctly remember you saying that to me, both on the podcast and off air at some point. And I thought of that throughout the year, just that seriousness that they carried with them and how you picked up on that on day one. And look where that brought them all the way to the World Series title.
Yeah, I would have really sounded smart if I picked him to win the World Series. That would have been something. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is one. So we just had the Braves, and I didn't pick the Braves because I think everyone has optimism about them. That felt a bit like a cop-out answer, but I do want to mention just how good Ron Acuña Jr. was last year. I know that Carl Ravage asked about both Austin Riley and Michael Harris brought it on air. So last year, Acuña became had the 6th-year right player led in the majors in both stolen bases and total bases in the season. Before Acuña, it had not happened since 1917 by Ty Cobb, and the other instance is 1914 by Benny Kaufman of the Federal League. Cobb in 1911 and 1908, and Hannes Wagner in 1908. So Ron Acuña Jr., in addition to establishing the 40-70 club, everything else you want to say, did something that we had not seen since 1917.
Number two.
Number two is, we'll call it 73.5. So speaking of those Rangers, big part of why they won the World Series and a big part of that manner that you were mentioning for them is Corey Seager. So last year, Corey Seager led the AL in doubles. So despite not playing all that many games, he dealt with injuries and everything. And this was one of those things I think I mentioned the other day with Alvarez. I meant to look this up at the end of the year and all off season and kept forgetting, and then one day a couple weeks ago said, oh yeah, Corey Seager did that, let me take a look. So he only played in 73.5% of the Rangers regular season game. That was the second lowest percentage of team games by a player to lead his own league in doubles since 1900, behind only Paul Mahler in 1987 at 72.8%. And I think this is relevant right now because Seager has had a slow start to spring training. We don't know what exactly his timeline will be like for the regular season. So the idea that he can have an impact even in fewer than three quarters of his team's game is very, very important.
And number one.
Number one is 500. So one more brief thing while we're talking about them and while they're fresh in our minds. So Spencer Strider enters opening day. I assume he'll be the opening day starter. Hasn't been announced yet, but either way, he enters the season with 483 career strikeouts in just 320 2/3 innings. So the fewest innings pitched by a pitcher to reach 500 strikeouts among guys to primarily be starters, so excluding all of those relievers, is 372 innings by Freddie Peralta. So Spencer Strider has more than 50 innings to get 17 strikeouts to set this record for the fewest innings to reach 500 strikeouts by guys who are primarily starters. He's going to do it in, what, probably a second start, knowing him? Maybe even his first, you never know.
You're 100% right. I was thinking, I was laughing. I'm like, yeah, I think you'll get that. You know, he's got a few innings to do it. I mentioned that I have picked the Phillies to beat the Yankees in the World Series. What's your World Series pick?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I saw you tweet that yesterday, and I knew that meant you were thinking of getting this ball rolling even sooner. And I'll take the swept up card. I am so in on the Braves. I think they have every element of motivation. I know that was a big conversation topic on the broadcast today. Carl Ravitch asking David Cone about 97 when his Yankees did not win the World Series and how that motivated winning three straight in 99 and 2000. These Braves are too good. They have not won a World Series yet. As currently constructed, I think I'm going to pick them, and I'm with you on the Yankees. I know it's the easy pick, but they look so good. I have some questions about the pitching depth overall, but so much faith in Gerrit Cole, and so much faith in Juan Soto, man. Can you imagine if we got Soto and Acuña in the World Series? These two guys who have been great friends, as we know, but also head-to-head from the day they came up, so finishing second for rookie of the year when Acuña won it in the NL in 2018. I mean, I just love this now as I made this pick, and now I need this to happen.
Oh, that's funny. You would have loved to have heard Aaron Boone, besides his whole thing about Apollo Creed, which I've known Booney for years and years and years. I've never known that he has this big thing about Apollo Creed to the degree that he was 10 years old. He created a movie where he was Apollo Creed, right? And Ryan Luzinski, the son of Greg Luzinski, played, I think, Rocky or something. Oh, yeah. But, you know, Booney had to play Apollo Creed in the movie. You should have heard all the way how he talked about Soto and how excited he was. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview. Seattle Mariners, machinations.
With the Mariners' spending limited by the concern over television revenue, general manager Jerry Dipoto had to get creative to add offense on the cheap, and he seemed to be successful. He signed Mitch Garver, who will get a lot of at-bats at DH, and traded for second baseman Jorge Polanco, outfielder Mitch Haniger, and masher Luke Raley.
The foundation.
While the Mariners' run production may be suspect and greatly reliant on players like Mitch Haniger to stay healthy, Seattle's rotation is deep and exceptional, maybe the best in the majors, with Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, and Brian Wu. Castillo is a leader. Last year, he made 33 starts and threw 197 innings.
A guy to watch.
Julio Rodriguez, one of Sarah Lang's favorite players, started slowly last season. On May 21st, he was batting .204, and over the last 111 games in the regular season, he batted .302 with a .526 slugging percentage and 25 homers. He finished the year with 180 hits, 102 runs, 103 RBI, and seems poised for a full breakout in 2024.
Win projection.
Pecota has the Mariners pegged for 84.5 wins. Sarah Lang says 87. Embo's got them with 88. I say 89. Dave Sims is play-by-play man on Mariners television. And Dave, I was going to mention this to you. First off, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Good to be with you, Buster.
Good to talk to you, too. I'm in the middle of sort of gathering opinions from different executives around baseball. about, you know, the most overrated team, the most underrated team. And I'm getting back the answer to a lot of folks asking me about, okay, or I asked them, who's the most underrated team? And I'm getting a lot of Mariners.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like looking at this team saying, this is a dangerous team. What do you think?
Well, I would agree with them. And Dusty Baker, who we all hold in high esteem, the last conversation I had with him, he was asking what's going on. And he says, hey, man, you know, you guys had us a couple of years ago. We were more afraid of you guys than anybody that we felt that we would be playing in the playoffs that year. And we had them and we let them go. And that, so we make the playoffs that year. We missed by game last year. Now you come in with Brian Wu and Bryce Miller getting a lot of experience. The back end are two young guys to go with Luis Castillo, Kirby, and Logan Gilbert at the front of that rotation. We are the envy, I think, of everybody in baseball in terms of starting rotation. Strength of the team, no question. There's no getting around it. And that's what we hang our hat on. And then now with they had Luke Raley. He can play first. He can play corner outfielder. Mitch Haniger's back. Hopefully he can put some bubble wrap around him and Mitch Garver. If they can stay healthy and play a whole bunch of games. And they think highly of Dominic Canzone. Cal Raleigh's a stalwart now, J.P. Crawford. It's a good-looking team and a bullpen that was good last year. May have a new piece or two this year, but I think that's real solid as well.
I think you could make a case that the Mariners might have the best rotation in baseball.
Oh, yeah, no
when
question.
When you talk about the growth potential, especially at the back end, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Bryce Miller's added a couple of pitches now. He said last year he had like one pitch against left-handers. Now he's got four, so he's ready to go to battle. Brian Wu's working on the secondary stuff. And then the other three guys, I mean, Castillo and Kirby and Logan Gilbert are flat-out studs. And the other thing, too, that's interesting, you know, you look at MLB's top 100 players right now. We got five guys here, Julio, 10, Castillo, 54, J.P. Crawford at 69, George Kirby at 75, and Cal Raleigh at 93. That's a pretty good group.
Yep. And I think that within the confines of the financial issue, whatever that is that the Mariners are having with the television, however you want to define that, it feels like that they lengthen their lineup suitably during the course of the offseason. What do you think?
Every coach I've spoken to, GM Justin Hollander, Jerry DePoto, president of baseball operations, they're thrilled with the athleticism and they're thrilled with the depth and the versatility. So those are the three things in terms of swinging the bat and you know, producing runs. You got to score more runs, can't strike out. There was a lot of strikeouts in the lineup last year. Love Eugenio Suarez. I mean, what he did attitudinally for the club is immeasurable. Struck out a lot, hit his home runs. But he's a little bit on a decline. Great guy. As a human being, oh, my God, forget about it. Teo Hernandez, same kind of thing. Struck out a lot. Now, with Gino, led the league, led the majors in home runs. And Kelnick got traded to Atlanta. But that's 58 home runs. Hopefully 58 to 59 home runs. Hopefully that can be made up as well, but with fewer strikeouts.
Tell me about what Julio Rodriguez learned from 2023.
Well, one thing, it sounded like he just played his first game, spring game Sunday, and because he had a problem with his left hand. And I think it's flat out overtraining. I think he realized he doesn't have to hit an 8-run homer to the moon every time he comes up. He's so strong, and when he gets the ball on the barrel, it's going to go somewhere, and it's going to go somewhere hard. And I think I had a brief conversation with him. We had 74 guys in camp until yesterday. It's stuck in his craw. He and the veteran guys that they missed by a game last year, and I think I look for him to be. I mean, he's so committed, Buster. Plays with such unmitigated joy. You and I grew up, and I'll assume that you grew up watching Mays and Clemente and those kind of guys.
Yep.
And the ability and the joy that they had is what he brings out every day. And I think I just want to continue on that role.
So I got asked a question. I did radio in Seattle recently, and they asked me about the team's culture. And I confess, I'm like, look, that's something that's really hard to assess unless you're around the team on a day-in and day-out basis for an extended period of time. And I can look at the Houston Astros and say, man, internally, there is some toughness there. Like with everything that they've gone through, Altuve, Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, now Justin Verlander, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is some toughness in that group. The Texas Rangers last year, I love telling this story. about the home run celebrations and how all teams were doing things. And I was watching the Rangers and they didn't seem to have one. And I asked one of their veteran players, I said, you know, do you guys have something? He goes, nah, we don't do that crap. And I think between Marcus Semien and Corey Seager, there was kind of a you know, all business, no messing around culture. How would you describe the Mariners culture?
I tell you, and funny you ask that question, because Tommy Joseph, who played a couple of years with the Phillies, he's an assistant batting coach yesterday, and I met him 2 days ago. And, I, you know, the old went up to say hello, and we wound up talking for a half hour. I mean, it was great. And I said, what's it like being here? He says, dude, it's fantastic. Start with the manager. He said, Scott Servais, his intensity and the meetings that they have every day is just tremendous. Let's see, Brownie. Brett Brown, he's the offensive coordinator. Looks like a DI when he's out there. You got everything lined up. You got Pete Woodworth, who is sort of like a really cool dude who speaks their language. He's a young pitching coach. He was a pitching coach of the year a couple of years ago. And basically he says, hey, man, throw the ball down in the middle of the plate. Throw strikes. Pound the strike zone. Then when you add all of that to, like, now in spring training, Scott Servais engages these guys. Somebody, you know, Buster, get up there and tell me what's the story. What's happening in the world today? Get them in front of people. So all the guys get to know each other in that forum during spring training. He's been doing that since he got here. And then when you got core guys like JP, Cal, you got Haniger back, those are glue guys. And they have a lot of fun. And that celebration with the Trident is tremendous. That is one of the best in the game. And these guys, having had a taste as a contender the last 3 years, they know that they're close if everything goes right. So just turn up the heat and keep going. It's a great culture, man. It really is. And I'm not just saying, yeah, I'm an employee and all that stuff, but it's serious. And I've been around for a long time in all the sports. It's a very good culture. And hey, this is the way we do things. Just get in line and it's going to work and you're going to have fun. And Scott always says, hey, man, be yourself. Be you.
Now, and you and I know, you know, being around players on a day in and day out basis, it's really important. Like I would always tell people about the Atlanta Braves, being around them in recent years. You walk into that clubhouse, those guys had fun with Wash, you know, his third base coach, Eric Young. And those, I mean, the energy that those guys created over 6 months, it made it fun for the players to go to the park. And that's why it's important. You're not just rolling out Stratomatic cards. Right?
Thank you very much. We're on the same page. I say it all the time. Stratomatic was a good game, but this is real life human beings, ups, downs, ins, out, girlfriend problems, wife problems, kid problems, sickness, got to take the baby to the hospital. But if you have the basic, you know, fundamentals there of a, you know, the foundation of guys melding together and actually saying, hey, man, love you, dude. Let's go. Let's rock. We're going to dinner tonight. And that, you know, it sounds Pollyannish, it sounds Mary Poppins, but it's real. And you're right. When you mentioned Atlanta last year, I mean, I love Wash. I love EY. EY Jr.'s with us.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier for Wash that he's back in the game as a skipper. And I accidentally butt dialed him a few days ago, and he called me back that afternoon, and we caught up. And he's just the best. He's unbelievable. But our chemistry, the chemistry with the Mariners is really good, man. I'm not blowing smoke at all. It's a real thing. And I know people, a lot of people in Seattle, there's a segment of the population that it seems like you can't satisfy them, which is good. I mean, they're hungry for winners. We've never been to the World Series. So I get it. Would they have liked to have seen four megastars added? Didn't happen. Got to ride with this bunch.
All right, Dave. Thanks for doing this. It's always fun to talk with you. I always learn.
Thanks, man. Buster, see you when you come over from Montana. It's an easy jaunt from Montana to Seattle.
You're right. Nonstop flight. I'll be there.
Thanks, man.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
So Tristan Casas was among the players who wore a microphone for us in Thursday's exhibition game. He was really funny. He was having a good time, you know, talking to runners as they were passing and having a lot of byplay with the booth, with Carl Ravitch, with Eduardo Perez, with David Cone. Give a listen to some of that.
Before game, pregame, breakfast. What's your routine?
Pregame, breakfast. I like to make breakfast at home, actually. Little omelet for me, three eggs, mushrooms, peppers, two strips of bacon, toast with an avocado. I'll drink a protein shake right before the game. Yeah, feeling light for the game now.
What part of that makes you feel light for the game?
The trip to the bathroom right before the game.
Okay,
so
okay.
That'll make me feel light. But yeah, I think it's the chia seeds and the flax seeds running right through me. That's the light part.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hey, everybody. We've got another round of Bleacher Tweets for you all today. And this one, we are kicking off with our friend Richie.
Hey, Buster. My name is Richie. I'm from Anniston, Alabama. My question is this. The Matt Spring for the Braves is a free agent after this season. We've already seen Freddie and Dansby leave. I wonder how much Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery's free agency will affect Max's thinking going into next season. I know that the thinking kind of is that he'll wind up in Los Angeles either with Dodgers or with Ron Washington, but I'm hopeful we'll wind up getting him back. Thanks for taking my call. Talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Yeah, Richie, I don't think that he'll be back with the Braves. We've seen time and again, and you mentioned the two great examples of it, of Freeman and Dansby Swanson testing free agency. The bottom line is Alex Anthopoulos, in his time as general manager or head of baseball operations for the Braves, has demonstrated he's not interested in paying retail price. He's not interested in that. He's going to look to find some teams that are some deals that are a little bit more team friendly. So I think Freed's going to get into free agency, and I will tell you that a lot of people around the game believe that he will wind up with the Dodgers. Whether that not that's true, I don't know. But as you know, he grew up in the LA area. He wears 32 because of Sandy Koufax. You know, he rooted for the Dodgers growing up. So I think a lot of people think he's going to wind up with the Dodgers.
Here's our next one.
All right, Buster. This is Alejandro from Puerto Rico. Or Puerto Rico, per se. I was wondering, that since there's a lot of news lately and articles about, you know, the new two expansion teams and their locations, seems like for sure Nashville is going to be one of the teams that joins the league. What kind of nicknames or, you know, team names do you think will be, you know, in the bidding to be for Nashville? I heard yesterday Bob say the Stars actually doesn't sound that bad, but also for Salt Lake. And also wondering, since I'm here in Puerto Rico, would be nice to get another series over here. I saw the Mets and the Marlins years like a decade ago, but I haven't seen another series come by. Do you hear anything about that even? About the podcast, I've been listening for over 9 years.
Alejandro, thanks for listening to the podcast. That's pretty cool. I haven't heard anything about another series in Puerto Rico. I'm sure that at some point it'll happen again soon. You have so many players here who played there. I can remember, you know, guys being really excited. Francisco Lindor, for example. I think it was when the Guardians, or at that time they were the Indians, played the Minnesota Twins, and you had players on both teams just so fired up to go and play in San Juan. Haven't heard that. Now, about the team in Nashville, yeah, Bob talking about the Stars, that makes some sense to me. I will tell you that I'm biased because I covered the AAA team there for 2 years out of college. I actually like the nickname, the Nashville Sounds, and I love the guitar scoreboard. that would be really cool. I have not heard any speculation about what the Utah team, if Salt Lake gets a team, what that nickname will be. But I'm, you know, whether it's the Nashville Stars or the Nashville Sounds, you know, they'll come up with something great. That is a great city for branding, that's for sure.
And here's our last one.
Hey, guys, this is Landon from Atlanta. Hey, Buster, what do you think about the Yankees championship possibilities in the near future and long-term future? The way I see it, they've got plenty of long-term money tied up in older players such as Stanton, Judge, LeMahieu, Rodon, as well as some upcoming free agents that are going to play a crucial part in this year's team, such as Gerrit Cole and Juan Soto. It also doesn't help that they're getting taxed at a rate of 100%, 110% for every dollar that they spend. Do you think there's any way that they can come out of this and still be long-term contenders? What do you think? I'd love to hear the thoughts. Thank you.
Landon, I don't know. You know, a lot of that's going to depend on how productive Aaron Judge is. You know, the guys that they have money tied into for the next few years, at the very least, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, this is year one of 4 years remaining. You need to get something out of him. I mentioned in the podcast the other day that they're very happy and optimistic about the turn that DJ LeMahieu has made. You know, he's got a long-term deal, although that was kind of spread out so they could defer some of the luxury tax threshold questions. You're right to point out that not only is Juan Soto potentially a free agent at year's end, the expectation is that he'll go into the marketplace, but if Gerrit Cole has a strong year, he could opt out of his contract. And boy, for the Yankees to lose the best starting pitcher they have, that would be a big blow. The one thing I'd say about the Yankees is, and I think this is true of the Dodgers, those teams can bounce back really quickly because they just have so many more resources. They can go out, you know, with the right signing, in addition to developing and drafting players, they can go out and add a couple guys and plug holes and turn around much, much more quickly. I think the bigger question for the Yankees is, how aggressive will Orioles ownership be in trying to take advantage of this window? Because player for player, man, the Orioles would seem to have a big advantage of talent with their position players.
That wraps our Bleacher Tweets and voicemail for the week. If you want to leave Buster a message, please call us at 406-404-8460 or tweet us.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Sarah Langs, to Dave Sims, to Boog Shambi. How about Tristan Casas? How about Joey Votto? And Sean, man, it was kind of a crazy week, back and forth, travel stuff, but thanks for working your way through it.
Oh, absolutely, man. Anything for you, Buster.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.